solitude for me is very important, because with solitude comes a kind of openness. If I travelled with a big team, or if I was part of a movement, or a part of a delegation, it would be very different. When you're on your own, there's something particular that happens to you and the people that you're working with. And travelling on my own in India, having the gift of meeting so many different artists living and working in different ways than I experienced, I began to feel that there's another journey that I wanted to make very much. This was even before I'd made the dream, while I was traveling for the dream. And I felt that I wanted to make a similar journey in the Arabic speaking world, and I wanted to work on the 1001 Nights. So that was a very clear idea in 2005. And once the dream was on, was opened in India, and I think once we'd done Stratford actually, but before we'd done the Roundhouse or whatever, I did my first journey to Cairo to seed the research for this project. So that's where the idea happened. And where that came from in me to decide at that point that that's the journey I wanted to make is then, of course, a deeper story. It's a story that goes back to a lifetime of living with the constant presence of the Arab world, the Arabs, as something different, as something that we were in conflict with. And that was a whole lifetime back into the Arab-Israeli wars, in the conflicts in Afghanistan in the 80s, into 9/11 and so on. You know, this extraordinary and important world that I was only observing from the outside. I mean, I'd been to the West Bank in around Ramallah before, but that was all. I'd been to the Alhambra, you know, my whole relationship with the Arab world was kind of from the outside, and I thought, this is absurd. You know, you can't live with the whisper of fear or the feeling of conflict or even ignorance. You can't live with that without trying to address it, if you're lucky enough to be able to. So I wanted to, I suppose in 2005, I felt, well, I can, because I was, you know what I mean? So I can do this. So then I want to do that there next. I want to go to the cities, the great cities of the Arabic speaking world, and see for myself something of people and lives, and particularly artists, because that's my community. That's the world in which I exist. You know, for me, before being British, before even being European, I'm a theatre director, and I seek out others. And so I wanted to travel and meet and see how people worked and what lives they led in these cities of which I was ignorant. And the impulse to work on the 1001 Nights comes from a deep interest that I have in stories and in the old stories. And again, a feeling that I didn't know this thing called the Arabian Nights as I thought of it then. I didn't know it, and I wanted to find out for myself what it is. And I'm still finding out. It's still, for me, a journey of finding out. I couldn't say to you today exactly what our show is, because I'm still working out what these stories are and what they're offering us. But that's the parallel journey that I decided in 05 I would make. It started, the research started in 06, and then it took 2 years to get it funded. And it really began, the planning was going on between 06 and 08, but it was all on paper, and it was all in meetings, and it was all about persuading people to fund us. And yes, no, yes, no, three yes, no's happened, very big yes, no's, until finally in the summer of 08, I was very lucky to be in Canada with our Midsummer Night's Dream. And the festival there, the Luminato Festival, had a big new commissioning grant that they were given just that summer when I was there. And they said, what are you doing next? And I said, well, I want to do this. And they said, oh, we want to do that. So by the autumn of 08, we had funding. And by the spring of 09, I was traveling properly. And then so from April 9 to the end of 10, I was traveling in the research and the casting. I did notice how I did a workshop with artists in Cairo, and I asked them to improvise stories just as a way of beginning. And it did interest me how much of the stories, how much of people's mindset was about, was focused on conflict and bloodshed and misinformation and a sense of being at war with the West. And also what I noticed in 06 in Cairo was there was a very strong sense from younger people of a kind of return to more conventional, it's just not really conventional, to more strict religious practice than their parents' generation. When I travelled in 09 and 10, I'm not sure how much of that had changed, probably a bit. It's very hard to tell. I think at any time since the Crusades, if someone had undertaken this journey, they'd have had a very complex and interesting time. It's very hard to gauge how that journey might have been different 5 years before or how it might be different in 5 years' time. I mean, of course, First of all, I travelled alone. I wasn't attached. I'm not representing the British Council, the British government, or anything. You know, there was a very strong sense of people needing to know where I was coming from, what I was doing, where the money was coming from. There was very strong suspicion that this might be in some way a project that was involving interest from within Israel or the West. That needed to be cleared up everywhere I went. It was very important that I travelled with and was always in companionship with someone from where I was going. So I always had an important companion who was of the theatre community there, and that they were in some way vouching for me or trusting in me, and that was very important. But that would have always been important, I think. I think that the depth of questions and suspicions is profound, you know. I found I needed to be very firm about certain things, and yet at the same time force them to be, the people who are arranging the auditions for me, force them to be very open in other ways. So for me, it's very important that I see as many of the well-known, well-established, known-to-be-good theatre artists as possible, and it's very important that I meet some of the people who are perhaps outside the inner circles as possible. So in the end, I got quite prescriptive about the structure of work that I wanted, and I talked to people in advance, and we would arrange things in a certain way. I'd want a certain kind of space, although that space was very rarely available. I'd want to have one open audition where anybody could come, and one audition that these local people had selected for me, and I needed a third audition where I would choose this. And I was tentative in that I didn't just parachute in an audition. I did that first trip in 06, and in that first trip in 06, I just felt my way around a bit in Cairo, and I met a key collaborator then. Then in 09, I didn't go on audition. I went to Damascus, Aleppo, Cairo, Alex, Amman, and Ramallah, I think, and East Jerusalem. And I used that as a tester trip where I did workshops, but I didn't audition. And I felt my way a bit. Now, what I realized after this is that, first of all, the theatre culture of every place is different. That's one. So in Algiers, it's very Stanislavskian. In Syria, it's very much attached to the one particular school. It's a communist system, really. In Beirut, it's very young and French and new theatre and device theatre. In Cairo, it's quite classical, Egyptian classical, which means sort of quasi-Western classical mixed with a bit of Egyptian classical. So, you know, each theatre culture is different, one. Two, you have to be very sensitive about people's sense of hierarchy. So certain actors would say they couldn't possibly audition. So you'd say, okay, I'll meet you, but you'll have to audition if you want to do it. And so some would say no, or some would come and meet me and then they'd audition. Some would be happy to audition once but didn't want to audition twice. And again, I'd say you have to audition twice. And there was always going to have to be a third time as well, which I'll talk about in a minute, but twice in their city. Some of the people who I was working with would clearly be only communicating with certain people when I'd want them to communicate with a wider community. So, and to a certain degree, I'd have to wait until I got there. So each time I was in a city, there'd be a sort of journey, and that was always interesting. I'd arrive on the first day, I'd get a feeling from the person who I'd met, where they were going with it. I'd have the first audition. Often the first audition was terrible. Only 3 people would turn up when 20 people said they would, and then the guy or the woman would be banging on the phone again. And, you know, and by the last day, there'd always be a crowd of people when it was supposed to be a recall day, and it was always like 10 people turning up who hadn't been there before, and they said, oh, we didn't know about it or whatever, and you don't know. So it was always a journey in each place. And that's partly to do with the nature of the way I'm working, but it's also the nature of the theatre cultures. There's no agents, there's no institutions, there's no structures. It's all to do with individuals who've built up networks, and it's how well you plug into the right network and whether you're lucky enough to be working with the right person. So that's the way those initial auditions went. And I'd meet as many actors as I could, musicians. I'd try to get the musicians along to the workshops. I'd work on the 1001 Nights, on the material, on the material that Hanan was producing. And this was the very important way I was encountering people. And I also did auditions in Paris and Toronto and London, as well as all the Arab cities I went to. So that was interesting as well.
So
it's certainly going to be more multicultural in terms of theatre, in terms of different ways of making theatre. But of course, I wasn't necessarily going to represent the different countries in the cast, because in the end, I was going to have to choose the best actors, you know, the people who would best play the play. So unfortunately, there are no Palestinians in it and no Yemenis in it, you know, because I didn't quite meet the right people, you know.
Yeah.
But initially, I was also researching. I mean, I was looking at the cities, I was looking at the buildings, I was talking to people, I was meeting academics and writers, and just having encounters and being challenged and drinking and eating and socializing, you know, just living and being. And but I was also eventually looking for the team, as you said, although initially I was only looking for the shortlist to the team. I mean, I was, because it's so mammoth, you know, if I did my first trip in April 2009, get to November 2010, you'd have forgotten who you met in 2009. So what I did is I was looking to choose about 70 people who were invited to Alexandria in November 10.
Yeah.
And for a week. So there was a week's work in November 10 in Alexandria, which was really extraordinary, where I had designers, musicians, actors, stage managers, in a way, all the pool that mostly were going to make the show. And that was important to me because, first of all, I could get to see everybody again. And secondly, I got to spend a week with people, so you really start to find out what people are like. Thirdly, I get to really test the material and work with the material. And fourthly, and in a way most importantly, all the people who are chosen for the show have been really prepared. They know what I'm about. They know what it's going to be about. They got a feeling for the way of working, and that's terribly important. And it's a bit like a chance for them to work out whether they really are up for this.
Yeah.
So, and that's something I'd learned from India, that how important that was to do that. So it was then that I was really looking for the team. And then from that session in November, I chose the team, and it's ended up at 24 actually. One guy sadly had to drop out because of his wife had an emergency back operation while we were rehearsing, and just had to go home. And I decided not to replace him at that stage. So it's 24 actors and musicians, 2 designers, a set designer, costume designer, lighting. So 3 designers, a lighting designer. These are the Arabic artists that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For a start, for me, I couldn't create a thing like this without an enormous amount of material coming from the artists themselves, the cast and the musicians. It's a huge mass of matter. It's a bit like sculpting. And the stories themselves, even the stories we've whittled down from the huge originals, are a mass in terms of theatre, and we have to whittle the theatre out of that. And I absolutely need to be working with people who can produce material, either just who can just do stuff and you can take from that, or who can make suggestions that are worth listening to. That's very important. And I was looking out for that at the auditions, of course. It's the creative people. But at the same time, interestingly, I think I was both more assertive and less assertive than directors many of them have been used to. I think that many of them are used to directors who are more prescriptive than I am. I mean, I think that many of them were used to more directors who are in the school of telling people exactly what to do and not, and also shouting at people and being quite authoritarian in their ways. And that's a European tradition, and it's a European tradition that has a resonance in the Arabic world as well. The conceptual and dominating European directing school is something I think they were used to more. But at the same time, I was more, I suppose, relentlessly certain and a more professionally experienced, probably, than a lot of directors they'd work with. So I think sometimes I was disarmingly unprofessional. You know, I'd get up in the morning, I'd do the warm-up with them, I'd wear baggy pants and a t-shirt, I'd sit on the floor and band chairs from the room, I'd be extremely friendly and easy with them, I'd laugh, I wouldn't sit behind a desk. Do you get what I mean? So in some ways, I think I was unusual in that way. And in another way, and I would constantly encourage and demand and listen to everybody who had something to say. But on the other hand, I was very strict about breaks, smoking, very strict about everybody turning up on time, which is not a tradition at all in the Arab world, you know, turning up on time. Strict about what people said in rehearsal to each other, you know, very strict about the dialogue. No, I wasn't speaking Arabic. I was beginning to understand Arabic. And back to the multilingualism. If we'd chosen to let people speak in dialects, it would have been more multilingual. As it was, we created the Arabic text in classical Arabic, modern classical Arabic, and then we translated to English and French. So we're trilingual at the moment. And in rehearsal, I communicated either through my bad French, but there always needed to be a translator. And we had a translator. First of all, that was one of the stage management team. Then it was clearly too much for her to both be a stage manager and translate. So then we brought in a translator from Marrakesh, who was a guy I knew in Marrakesh. There is no theatre culture that I went to that is entirely masculine. I mean, Yemen, very much so. I didn't go to Saudi. There's no theatre to speak of in the Gulf. So I didn't do much auditioning in Oman and probably is masculine dominated, but it's not culturally a very interesting place for me, very exciting place. In places like Syria, Morocco, Algeria, Egypt, the places where I were, the auditions were more or less 50-50, and they were theatre cultures in which women had a very strong presence. But the masculinity of the authority, the hierarchy, the misogyny, you might say, varied from place to place and to how overt it was. So somewhere like Syria is interesting because in Syria you have very strong women in positions of authority. It mixes a kind of communistic feeling, Syria, with a Arabic, Islamic feeling. Mm. So on the surface, the women are immensely strong and powerful in their presence. And yet, I did notice the more time went on, how they had to defer to or humour or allow male authority. Somewhere like Egypt is more overtly male and in its kind of hierarchies. Somewhere like Morocco is more, it's interesting, very powerful women, very, it reminded me of South America, Morocco. Very free, powerful expression, but over time the male hierarchies dominated. You know, Algeria is very traditionally male in some ways, but there's always people who break that mould. So it's a bit of a subtle question,
yeah.
That. I mean, the theatre culture is not representative of the wider culture. It's less hierarchical, it's less male-dominated, and so on, than most areas of public life. But it's also a small world.